Welcome, friends, to the Generations Radio broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host with you today, father of five, broadcasting from my basement out here in the eastern plains of Colorado during the demise of Western civilization. Yes, it's been about a 400-year decline, but we are at the very hind end of it after, say, about 150 years of the breakdown of the family in the West. Egalitarianism, of course, taking the woman away from the home and creating a society in which men and women believed that they were more individuals than part of a nuclear family, therefore the nuclear family right now, at least the nuclear family in the superficial sense where a man and a woman live together, have children, now making up less than half of American households. Friends, a lot of changes have occurred in just the last 50 years or 100 years. Just open your eyes, you're going to see that the family is pretty much negligible. Now, of course, on the outside, there's something of remains of a family today, but most of the time we're fragmented economically, fragmented educationally, fragmented ecclesiastically in the church. We are fragmented everywhere. But it's no surprise to me that the Washington Times comes out with an article this last weekend indicating that the gender wars are still in full force. Well, they've been in full force now for about 150 years, but it's only heating up. Women are treated with less chivalry today than ever before. 8 out of 10 Americans, in fact, say women today are treated with less chivalry than in the past. A majority of the respondents in the survey, 52%, say relations between men and women are not fine these days. Just 13%, in fact, strongly agreed that the sexes are in harmony. Well, the gender wars are in full force, and that's obvious, Dave, from the sorts of movie fare we've seen the last number of years. You remember Kill Bill, where you had a woman running around beating the living daylights out of 400-pound giants. And the same sort of theme is brought out in this late movie Salt. Now, I haven't seen the movie, but again, it's Angelina Jolie, who typically appears in these thriller killer movies. It's interesting that men want to see these women whooping up on men, and that's what happens in this rather fantastic film, where again, you've got your 107-pound woman beating the living daylights out of 478-pound lunks. Folks, there's these female James Bonds are going to be, I think, more popular in the days to come.
Well, I think you've got a lot of things running through here. You have a woman who's particularly attractive. She's unattached, so she's free, independent in every sense of the word. She depends on no man for anything, including protection. In fact, she can go ahead and beat up the men. I wonder about all these girls who are in karate classes and so forth, if this isn't driving some of that. And she's also available. See, she's sexually active and available and attractive. And I think for the men, that's what drives it. For the women, it's the idea of just, who needs a man? Need a man like a fish needs a bicycle.
Yeah, well, folks, what we're seeing is that women no longer compliment men and men no longer compliment women. It's the survival of the fittest, man, in a Nietzschean world where you just got to get a boot in the face of somebody else. And if you can compete between the sexes, maybe one sex will wind up superior over the other. And that's, friends, that's the whole system. That's what we're taught. That's the same thing exists, by the way, in this whole racist debate that's constantly waging. People are comparing the races, comparing the genders, and they're wanting to compete. And it's a competition. It's an evolutionary, Nietzschean evolutionary competition that's being foisted upon us in these movies and of course, through our educational institutions. You know, it was interesting, Dave, speaking of film, in 1931, James Cagney was involved in one of the most shocking moments in all of film history. 1931, he shoves a grapefruit in the face of his on-screen mistress, and it was a shocking, shocking moment to push back the limits of acceptable screen violence in 1931. But now, man, we're not shoving grapefruit in the face of some woman. You're beating the living daylights out of a woman, or the woman is beating the living daylights out of you if you're a guy. It is a violent, violent struggle between the sexes, and we're seeing it on the screens all the time. No surprise to me, Dave, that rape within the military or rape within society or within the college scene is not unusual at all today. My guess, if you compare rape on college campuses between today and what was happening, say, in 1870, or 1760, it would be night and day. In fact, in the 1800s, 1700s, you didn't have these multi-gender campuses anyway, so chances are there wasn't a lot of rape going on.
Well, you know, Kevin, I think when you look at the loss of chivalry, you got two main factors, men and women. Men are not the gentlemen they used to be. They're not extending chivalry the way they used to. Now, it's not received as well, very well anymore either. The feminists have said, you know, why are you opening that door for me? Don't you know I'm strong? I'm a woman. I can open that door myself. And, you know, there's the old line, are you opening that door because I'm a lady? And the man says, no, I'm opening that door because I'm a gentleman. And that's the other half of this, is that women act less like ladies. They don't want to be identified as ladies. They don't want to be a meek and quiet spirit. They don't want to take their husband's last name. They want to be independent and free of men and use men the same way that men want to use women, as a little ride at Disneyland sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm not seeing that Angelina Jolie in the movie Salt is really going to be a good exhibition of the meek and quiet spirit that is commended by the Apostle Paul in 1 Timothy. So, you know, I'm not sure that we're really getting the biblical concept for beautiful womanhood and chivalrous manhood in some of these movies today. But certainly we're not seeing that sort of a worldview from the Muslims either. So, folks, we want to contrast worldviews here today. And one of the most shocking, speaking of shocking, the most shocking magazine covers I have ever seen came out in Time Magazine just, what, a week or two ago, where we got this lovely picture of a Muslim woman whose nose had been severed, and by the way, her ears as well, by her own husband, okay? They took the old hatchet and gave her the old whackety-whackety. And this is one of the saddest, I think the saddest, most horrifying magazine covers I've ever seen. Dave, I'm just going to say it. That's not chivalry.
No, that's not chivalry at all. That's cruelty, unspeakable cruelty. If that sort of thing were happened in the United States, we'd of course go after the husband as abusing his wife, and it's not treating her as the weaker vessel. That's
certainly
mistreating
her
as something. It's horrific. Yeah. It is horrific the way that women are treated outside of a Christian worldview, though.
It's too bad we have these other worldviews out there. And folks, women and children first was always an expression we used for what happens if there is ever some sort of a horrible accident at sea or somewhere else where somebody's got to be saved and who's going to survive in the lifeboats. Friends, typically it's been women and children first. That has been the mantra. That has been the biblical chivalrous approach to giving up our lives for others. The husband is supposed to sacrifice his life for his wife, even as Jesus loved the church and gave himself for it. That's a Christian worldview. Granted, that's nothing that the egalitarians understand. That's nothing the Muslims understand. We're talking about three completely different worldviews sitting side by side today. Imagine, Dave, a Muslim, an egalitarian humanist, and a Christian on the Titanic or the Birkenhead, several ships that went down over the last several hundred years. What would a Muslim do if the ship was going down? He's on the Titanic. He's got his wife or his wives there. Of course, the first thing he might do is clip his wife's nose and ears, and then he'll chuck her overboard. Or maybe he'll pick his favorite wife to go with him. I think that is what the Muslim would do. I'm serious. I'm not kidding here.
He chucks all his wives and he takes his camel.
Well, maybe. He's going to preserve himself because the Quran is very, very clear on the relationship of man and woman. The woman is not equal under the law. She's not treated equally under the law. The woman requires more witnesses in a court of law than the man does. Friends, the woman is not treated equally under the law because the woman, according to the Quran, is despised. But, of course, it's the Muslim religion that is favored today by our systems. I mean, our own president favors the Muslim religion, I believe, over the Christian religion. I mean, he's celebrating Ramadan right now in the White House. This guy really loves the Muslim religion. So, friends, I just want you to take a good, hard, long look at Time Magazine. Those of you who have access to it through the American Family Association broadcast. Okay, this is the future of America. All right, just take a good, hard, long look at that. And those of you who like Barack Obama and those of you who appreciate the Muslim religion, now being taught actually in classrooms all over America, in public school classrooms, there's a huge hurrah right now about that. But, Dave, and if you appreciate the fact that they're going to be putting a mosque right around Ground Zero, and I heard Hillary Clinton and a few other folks are fighting very hard to make sure that mosque makes it to Ground Zero. So, okay, if you appreciate the Muslim worldview, then I just want you to appreciate what's going to happen to women in America in the year 2100, when, of course, existentialism and humanism dies because of its birth implosion, and humanism typically rots out and doesn't survive very long. So the religion left in America in the year 2100 will probably be the Muslim religion, probably a few Mormons as well, but polygamous religions, patriarchal, heavy-duty religions that favor men over women will probably survive in the years to come. And Barack Obama's doing what he can to promote the Muslim religion in this country.
Well, yeah, Kevin, when you talk about the Muslim religion and women, women are not even treated as people. They don't have personhood. They're more viewed as beasts of burden. Beasts of burdens, beasts for pleasure, beasts for fathering more sons. But really, when I say he'd take his camel, that's not just a normal Dave snarky remark. That's probably true, because the camel is a better beast of burden to accomplish what he needs to get done. That's the view of women in the Muslim world.
Okay, the Muslim is going to save himself, and maybe his favorite wife, or as Dave says, his favorite camel. That's what happens when the Muslim leaps the Titanic. But what happens to the humanist? Okay, here we go, folks. The egalitarian humanist on the Titanic with the Birkenhead. What happens to this guy? Well, I think he gives his wife a good swift kick and says, hey, it's the survival of the fittest, baby. And he gets his best tennis shoes on and runs for the raft and tries to cut the moorings before his wife gets a chance to leap into the boat. So that's my guess for the egalitarians. Hey, man, it's a competitive world. And if that man can beat that woman to that lifeboat, he's there. He's in it. He's leaving that wife to drown.
It is the operative word, because we all know that the humanist males will be outperformed in a physical contest by his wife. He's just too wimpy.
Okay.
He's too wimpy to stand for principle, okay. And he's too wimpy to defend himself. I think maybe his wife will throw him his favorite Game Boy, though.
Yeah, as he goes glub glub. Well, here's another option for the egalitarian humanist on the Titanic. I mean, what's he going to do? Come on, the worldview is going to drive action, so how is this worldview going to play out as he takes a flying leap off the Titanic? Here's what happens. I think what happens is the first thing he does is he tosses the Down syndrome kids overboard. Okay, that's the first thing that happens. You know that. That's what they've been doing in abortion clinics. That's what they do in hospitals all the time. Dave, I heard recently that about 90%, and I'm not sure if these numbers are correct, but about 90% of kids who are conceived with Down syndrome, if they can catch it before the birth, about 90% aren't making it through that birth canal. That's what I'm hearing. All right, so the first thing he does is he tosses the Down syndrome kids overboard. Then
for,
he tosses,
for the children.
What's that?
He does that for the children.
Oh, for the children, yes, of
for
course. Thank you. Thanks for putting that in. Next thing he does is he tosses the children who are breastfeeding. Because, Dave, obviously they can't survive outside of the womb or outside of dependence upon the breast. So if they're that dependent upon their mother in the womb, through the little tubey thing that feeds the child, or by means of the breast, if he's not independent, man, we got to toss the kids who are unable to survive outside of the womb of the breast. We got to toss them out.
So as long as we have the viability test, we might as well go ahead and throw the elderly too.
Yeah, oh, that already happened. I'm sorry, I missed that. That already happened.
Just wheel them off.
Yes, wheel them off. Yeah, yeah. Just kind of wheel them off, and the little wheelchairs will go tumbling into the water. Okay, so here's the egalitarian humanist, friends. Survival of the fittest. Okay, here's what happens. Here's who gets saved. Who gets saved in the end? The scientists. The scientists will get saved. Why? Because they have the greatest value to humankind. Okay. We know that, don't we, guys?
And the politicians.
Oh, the politicians, yes. The scientists and the politicians. Al Gore. What you're saying is Al Gore.
Al Gore, who is a, you
Al
know,
Gore is
like
saved.
A scientist,
yeah.
And like a politician, he'd be saved, yes.
Al Gore gets saved. Al Gore gets saved. I'd say 30 men and 27 women. Okay, I don't know what the ratios now are of scientists in your average laboratory, but that's probably like 30-27, something like that. So it'll be 30 men, 27 women saved. The kids on the breast, they're in the ocean. The elderly are, they've already gone glub glub. And the kids with Down syndrome, gone. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, now, as far as the Christian worldview is concerned, women and children first. All right. No, I realize that's a shocker to some of you who are egalitarian humanists and Muslims who chop off your wives' noses and ears. Okay, that would be, I'm sure, a shock to your system. But the Word of God, Ephesians chapter 5, is pretty clear. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. It's powerful, sacrificial. It's called love. Jesus Christ gave us the example, and men should be the greatest lovers of them all. That is, sacrificial lovers, willing to go to the cross and take nails in our own hands in order to save our wives and our children. Ladies and gentlemen, I know that's odd. I know that's strange. I know that that is as far away from the movies like Salt, the female James Bond, or the male James Bond, where the male James Bond are beating the snot out of the women, or where the women are beating the snot out of the men. I know that's a very, very odd concept, but you're going to find it in a biblical perspective on ethics. Ladies and gentlemen, in just a moment, we'll be back with more on this topic. How do we prepare our daughters, our sons, to take care of this world and complement each other according to the standards of God's Word. We're going to talk about that next. Implications relating to college. Implications relating to education. We'll talk about that next on Generations.
Children, it's time for your classics lesson. Let's pick up on page 214 in Plato's Republic, shall we? Our women guardians must strip for exercise. Then their character will be all the clothes they need. They must play their part in war. Wives shall be held in common by all, and children shall be held in common, and no parent should know his child, or child his parent.
Women nude in the gymnasium? Women fighting wars? Wives held in common? No mom and dad for their kids? Why is that, Dad? Why?
Are you tired of the pagan classics? Try the other classics. The Christian classics.
Dave, it's so hard to be chivalrous. For an Angelina Jolie, she seems to be able to handle things herself. I mean, she took that down.
Well, it is hard to be chivalrous when a woman's pointing a weapon at you.
Yeah.
But, of course, we don't do chivalry. That is, we don't be gentlemen because of the reactions. We're gentlemen because the Bible commands us to treat our wives and, by extension, all women as weaker vessels. And that is, we're to lay down our lives for them. We're to treat them in a particular way as gentlemen, not having anything to do with their reaction, which, if you went by the reaction of the feminists, you would never give up your seat for a woman. I'm reminded of a story, a true story, where a man's on the subway and there's a pregnant woman on the subway, and the subways during rush hour get very, very packed. He's in one of the seats by the windows, and here's this pregnant woman hanging onto the thing overhead, and he asked his wife,
he's watching Angelina Jolie in Laura Croft and the whole thing.
I don't know what he's watching, but he's asked by his friend, aren't you going to give up your seat for that woman? And he said, no. She wanted her own rights. Now she can stand for them. And this is the cold reply of men who have been mistreated because of their attempt to be gentlemen. But see, a real gentleman doesn't do anything because of the reply or what he gets back from it. He does it because it's the right thing to do. He opens the door for the car door for his mom. He opens the door for his sister, and he opens the door for a woman. And by the way, he might open the door for anybody behind him because it's polite.
Well, folks, this, of course, is affecting the way that young people are being raised. And what we're finding is that there are no men being raised to be providers for their wives. They have no real focus in life. Women are now controlling most of the work right now. There are more women in the workforce than men, thanks to the he session or man session that we've been through over the last 3 to 4 years. As I mentioned several days ago, 75% of jobs lost over the last 3 years have been jobs that were peopled by these men. And it's women who are getting the jobs today. And men aren't really working as they once worked. And why is that? Because, hey, the women can do the jobs, and oftentimes they do a better job doing the jobs than men do. Here's a recent article from New York Times Magazine, a 17-page article on 20-somethings. It turns out these young people, mostly men, are untethered to romantic partners or to permanent homes through the 20s, going back to school for lack of better options. They're traveling. They're avoiding commitments. They're competing ferociously for unpaid internships or temporary work. They're forestalling the beginning of adult life. He says the 20s are in a black box, and there is a lot of churning there. One-third of people in their 20s move to a new residence every year. 40% move back home. They go through an average of 7 jobs in their 20s, more job changes than any other stretch. 2/3 spend at least some time living with a romantic partner without being married. Now, as you know, men are not growing up by the time they're 30 years of age. 70% of them aren't grown up. That is, they do not have homes, they don't have jobs, steady jobs, they don't have children, they don't have families by the time they're 30. And then 70% of them, up from 30% in 1970. Friends, this is, I think, the most important social shift we have seen over the last 30 to 40 years. Men are not growing up, and that, of course, is why women are growing up faster still, and will have to
take a lot of the work in the years to come. No question about it. And, Dave, here's an excellent example of that in the Wall Street Journal. This is a full-page ad in the Wall Street Journal, small parent investment, big student return. That is, you want to get the Wall Street Journal for your kid because your kid can be very successful in life. And the picture, of course, is a woman because it's women that will have the jobs in the years to come. It's the women that are getting the jobs. The men aren't growing up. They're too busy playing computer games, and they're not interested in growing up and providing for families. I know why God created them, to take dominion and to be the breadwinners, those responsible for the material sustenance of the home. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8, that's according to 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8. The Bible assumes that men are the ones who will bring home the butter and provide for their wives, for their children, for their mothers, if they happen to be widows. The Word of God assumes that men are those that will be doing that, but not the future of this country. No way, no way, no way. It's women that will have to fend for themselves. Remember, the majority of households in America led by single women. This, of course, why the largest socialist voting base in America are single women, and they will continue to vote for socialism. They will continue to vote for Barack Obama. So you know, we're not going to win with the Palins, friends. Feminism will not win the day. Period. The largest socialist voting bloc in America are single women. They don't need men. What they need are government welfare programs and government socialist control over health care and their insurance. That's why we will be socialist. We don't have men. We don't have fathers. We don't have the security of homes and families anymore. But what we do have are families that make sure that their college students, their little girls, get access to the Wall Street Journal because they will have 140% more chance to be starting a full-time job upon graduation, 46% better prepared for a job interview, and 76% more likely to have a GPA of 3.5 or higher.
And you
so
know
you can
means.
Go to college and get a good J-O-B and work for the man. Oh, I mean the woman. You can work for the corporate structure and hopefully get a good welfare package through your socialist fascist system and wind up being a whole lot less free in the years to come. So that's the vision here, Dave.
Well, the vision is that if you get the Wall Street Journal, your pretty young daughter in the shoes there, she's going to college and never coming back. She's gone, man. Somebody else can take over the payments. You're free. You're free. She's independent, and you're free. That's
for
the vision.
For $32 a month. That's a pretty good deal. $32 a month. For $32 a month, give her the Wall Street Journal. And you don't have to worry about her the rest of your life, guy. Of course, she won't get married, and she'll probably marry some slob, get divorced 4 to 5 times, and have to be the breadwinner for the next 47 years of her life. That's the vision, Dave. That's the vision. What, are we exaggerating on the program? Is that possible?
Between high school graduation and college freshmen arriving at the dorm, one of the big presents that moms particularly are trying to get for their daughters is breast augmentation surgery, because it will not only make them more popular, but the chances of finding a good sugar daddy are higher. But maybe they would have money would have been better spent. They just would have got the Wall Street Journal and she'd get herself a good management job, middle management for a big Fortune 500 company.
Well, a lot of change is going on right now in society, friends. Men aren't growing up. The adolescent age has now turned into the young adult age. There's a psychologist named Jeffrey Jensen Arnott, a psychology professor at Clark University, who's insisting that we've got a new concept. G. Stanley Hall caught up with this idea called adolescence back in 1904 with his book. But now we've got a psychologist talking about emerging adulthood. Emerging adulthood, that is slowly emerging adulthood that doesn't quite really happen in the 20s, probably won't even quite happen in the 30s, and in the end, we're going to see more birth implosion, we're going to see more single moms, we're going to see a lot of young men that never get a grip on life, never realize their God-given responsibilities to take dominion and be responsible for the material sustenance of the home, and society will continue going the direction it's been going. And Dave, as I've said many, many times before, homeschooling moms right now in the homeschooling movement are coming home to prepare their daughters to leave home. And it's obvious why they're doing that. The social pressures are incredible. Of course they're going to send their daughters to college. Come on, of course that's going to happen. Along with the bulk of public and private school students, because 70% of young men are not grown up by 30 years of age. They're a bunch of slobs. And the vast majority of them will not provide a good living for their wives if they do get married. Ladies and gentlemen, these are the social realities of the day. I mean, get a grip. That's what's happening. Unless these young men are discipled. Unless fathers come home. Or unless mentors and shepherds
elders, pastors begin to challenge young men to fight the social pressures here, Dave, is nigh unto impossible. And I understand why families are going the direction they're going. And I understand that the workforce is going to be made up largely of women in the years to come. And the men will be sitting around playing computer games, smoking peyote, and engaging in gang warfare. And they're not going to be really producing anything productive for their homes and for society. That's the direction we're headed, friends. And we're seeing the concomitant breakdown of education right now as well. I've got another story I could share with you about scores stagnating in the high school years. Only 25% of high school graduates are prepared for entry-level college. Okay, our schools are disintegrating as well. We're seeing ACT scores have decreased over the last 4 to 5 years. And among those who are taking less than their core requirements in their high school years, we see a massive drop-off from about a 19 average to an 18 average on the ACT score in just the last 3 to 4 years. An amazing story here Stephanie Banchero from the Wall Street Journal. This is the Wall Street Journal again, pointing out that high schools are failing in America. And by the way, the major point is that elementary schools are showing progress on nationally achievement exams, but the high school results are perniciously low. So if you send your kids to high school, chances are they're going to lose their character. They might even lose their virginity, but they won't see any real establishment of character, and their educational scores will be perniciously low. And remember, folks, if you are planning to send your kid to a high school, you got to remember that high schools are doing worse than junior highs and K-6 elementary schools, even worse in terms of their character, in terms of the performance in academics, and less than 25% of kids coming out of high schools are prepared for college. That is, they're going to need remedial work because they didn't quite get it in K-12 schools, even after the $80 trillion was spent on them over the previous 12 years. Ladies and gentlemen, the failure of the education system in America, of course, this will mean the failure of economies. And yes, there will be women trying to salvage our political states and our economies in the years to come. And maybe they might even have access to the Wall Street Journal. You might even be able to get them a copy of the Wall Street Journal, and they might do well enough to try to salvage something in the years to come, but it's not going to salvage a nation. It's not going to salvage an empire, friends. We're seeing a breakdown of national character. And a lot of it's happening because of the egalitarianism that's been foisted upon us and the war against boys and the fact that we are not training boys, educating boys, discipling boys as we ought to. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a lot more to say about this, but I would suggest you get my CD series that I've given on the family and on the raising of boys to be mighty men of God. Those messages available at our website, kevinswanson.com, and you will enjoy our series of vision messages on how to raise godly families and godly women and godly men who will be men of God, who can salvage civilization, communities, churches, families in the years to come. All of that available at our website, kevinswanson.com. Folks, you can interact with the radio program by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. You can also hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.